You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Annoyance with nursery rhymes, being honest about not liking a child's artwork, napping, alcohol, diapers. You might not typically associate these themes with love poems.
But New Yorker contributor and parent John Kenny might not be a typical poet. As a follow-up to his New York Times best-selling collection, Love Poems for Married People, his new book is called Love Poems for People with Children. John, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
Well, there's a lot of poetry about love. I think like most of it, right? But I can't think of a lot about love with people who have kids. Why did you decide to tackle this theme?
You know, I'm a poet in much the same way Arby's is farm-to-table dining. I tackled it. We had done a book called Love Poems for Married People, and it just seemed to make sense. Also, my kids were driving me nuts, and so I thought I'd write this.
Now, let's give people a flavor of your poems right up front. Would you mind reading, how about, there's a lot of good ones to choose from. Most of them you can say on the air. How about Good Job was one I like, halfway through the book there.
Sure. Good job. I say these words so often to you, from the sidelines of soccer games, after the school play, when you get a glass of water by yourself, as if you just rebuilt a carburetor. Want to know the truth? You didn't do a very good job in soccer. You let that little weaselly kid get by you and score. Why were you running alongside of him anyway? Maybe take him down next time. And Meryl Streep, you're not. The teacher had to feed you the lines, which were frankly unconvincing. I know I'm saying this to you on your fifth birthday, but I think you'll thank me one day.
Yeah, and a lot of your poems have that kind of the internal reality, the internal monologue of what might be going through your head at various moments in parenting.
Yeah, it's a funny thing, parenting, because you can be holding two disparate thoughts in your head at the same time, right? It's the greatest job in the world. It's also it can be the hardest, especially with little guys.
And there's a line in another poem. Maybe you'll read this one, too. But you talk about the idea of kids versus actual kids. And they're not exactly the same thing.
No, they are not the same thing. I was late to have kids. I have five brothers. They all have kids. They're great fathers. They were super good role models. But it's, you know, I always thought being an uncle was kind of the same thing. And I remember my brother sort of chuckling, saying, you'll see. But you get to go home when you're an uncle. And, you know, it's a full-time job. So it's a different experience, isn't it, when they're your own kids.
And there are some of these written from your perspective as a dad. There are some clearly written from a woman's perspective. Did you get some collaboration with your wife on some of these?
All of the ones written from a woman's perspective are the intelligent ones. The women are heroes in my mind, being one of six boys. We worship my mother. I simply can't give my wife enough credit. Her name should be on the book. She's a great editor and writer in her own right. And I would read her the day's work, and she's a tough critic. So when she didn't laugh, which she enjoys doing at things I say to her, I knew I didn't have anything. But she edited these poems with me, so I really could not have done this without her.
Talking to John Kenny about his book, Love Poems for People with Children. Now, this is partly about relationships with kids, but also about the relationship between a pair, in this case of parents, and how things change when they have kids, and that, you know, the romance that used to be there might not could anymore. Can you talk about how that changes?
Oh, I would be happy to. We just celebrated our 14th wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
And thank you. And I'm a very lucky and very happy man. I cannot speak for my wife. Her divorce attorneys say that, you know, she will talk about it. But look, you meet and you get married and you're madly in love and, you know, you're doing the things that madly in love people do. And then you think to yourself, you know what we should do? Instead of sleep in and eat when we want, is, you know, have little wild animals in the house. And it changes things. It changes priorities. It changes sleep habits. It changes alcohol consumption. It changes a lot of things, right? And you know, I'm a fan. I believe it's my life's work. There's no book. There's no piece of writing that's ever going to bring me the same kind of joy. But I think it's okay too to sort of say, hey, geez, this is really hard.
Right. And I've read scientific research on that. People say, yeah, having kids gives me joy. But those day-to-day moments, it's not this constant fire hose of joy. There's a lot of bad stuff. But what was it like to write these books? Did it help you kind of appreciate the big picture in that way?
Yeah, I think it did. As I say, I came to it late, and I think I will, you know, overshare. I think I was a very selfish sort of younger man, and I don't think I would have been as patient or as good a father. And I wanted to be a good father. And so I'm as tough as it is sometimes, not all the times, I do relish it more. My kids have a somewhat warped sense of humor, and I wrote the dedication to the book, and I shared it with my kids, and they're like, so I'll read it. It says, "To Lulu and Hewitt, now is probably the wrong time to let you know that I am not your real father."
How'd they take that one? Yeah.
My daughter sort of chuckled, and my son, who's 7, said, "Dad, that's ridiculous. Seriously, though, are you my father?" But you have to give them something to talk to the therapist about in their 20s.
Now, you wrote one of the poems in the book is, along the lines of, what if there'd been a job interview for parenting? And I'm an adoptive parent, so in a way there was a job interview for parenting for me, and it didn't scare me off. But looking back at it, if you could have, this is a hypothetical, if you could have somehow understood the reality of kids before you had kids, would you have made the same decision?
I think the human race would stop if people, so essentially the job interview is, do you enjoy sleep? Yeah, no, I love it. Do you enjoy having lots of sex with your wife? No, that's great. Great. Do you enjoy doing what you want when you want to do it? Absolutely. Do you like having people throw up on you? No. That's essentially, do you enjoy worrying all the time about where they are, what they're eating and what they're doing? And yet somehow it's all worth it in a really sort of huge way. My favorite people are the people who are dedicated to their kids, who their job is important. Their, weekend running is important, but the thing that's the sort of the core of who they are is their kids.
I love the last line of your last poem in the book, and this one's a little against type. This is the more sentimental one. Your last line is, "I'm so lucky to be your dad."
Yeah, I in the first book, Love Poems for what's the name of it? Love Poems
Married
for
People.
Married People.
Yeah.
Thanks. I should know these.
You
things,
of all
I?
People. Yeah.
I at the very last minute, right before the book was going to press. I'd written all these ridiculous poems, and I wanted to write, or rather attempt, because I am not a poet. I have huge respect for poets. I think it's an incredibly hard thing to do, to put the sort of ineffable down on paper. But I wanted to write one to my wife, and I did. And I thought with this book, since it's about children, I should write one about my kids. And I must say it was hard to do. It was really hard to do, but it's sort of secretly for me my favorite.
Okay, now you say you're not a poet, and I'll believe you, and yet you've got this
you've
book.
You've clearly not read the book.
I have. You take words and you convey sentiments that resonate with other people who are parents, i.e. me. I mean, you've committed some poetry. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I'm not really a poetry guy, though, so do with that what you will.
This is exciting news
yeah.
for me. I appreciate that. Well, you're kind to say so. It was important to me to at least have them look like poems. I think it's funny because I have a newfound appreciation for poetry, right? Because I think in high school and college we are forced to read things, and oftentimes it's sort of ancient stuff, right? It's your Keats and your Shelley and your. But in sort of doing these books, I sort of jumped back into poetry and read a lot of different people, and you know, the Billy Collinses of the world and the Mary Olivers in the world and the Sharon Olds of the world. There's a lot of sort of secrets to life in what these people write.
In our last minute or so, John, now these poems about you know, love poems for parents are out in the wild. Do you get a lot of response from people saying, "Yeah, that's it," or "That's just like it," and then everybody's starting to share anecdotes with you?
It's been really wonderful. One of the nice things about social media is that people do reach out, and a lot of times we'll hear things like, "Geez, I think did you have a camera in my house?" and I think sometimes with kids, with marriages, with the things that go on in families, you sometimes sort of feel alone. You think to yourself, "Geez, this doesn't happen to other people. These kinds of annoying fights, my kids saying this, and just the sort of." The daily stuff. And what's been interesting and sort of heartening for me is how universal the whole experience is.
John, thanks so much for joining us today.
Rob, thank you for having me.
John Kenny is a New Yorker contributor and author. We talked to him today about his collection of poetry, Love Poems for People with Children. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a Wisconsin health professional currently treating COVID-19 patients in New York City joined us to share her experiences. Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Brad Kohlberg checking in on writer Michael Perry.
Wisconsin author Mike Perry is trying to hunker down the best he can right now, just like the rest of us.
Howdy, folks, up here in the little room over the garage where I do my writing.
And recently, he's been taking a little time most days to read from one of his books online.
I figure a lot of you are holed up and hunkered down, and it's nice to make a little connection, even if it's just me talking into my phone.
So I gave him a call just to check in.
How you holding up?
Oh, we're pretty fortunate. I mean, we've got a little place out here on the back 40, so... My older daughter came home from college, and then also my younger daughter, of course, came home from school, and I came home from being on the road quite a bit. So we've been in a self-isolation, self-quarantine situation, and we're pretty fortunate. We have food and some options, you know. There's just so many people in such dire circumstances that... We're doing fine, and then we're trying to abide by the rules and help the best we can, you know.
One day, Tom and I are rummaging in his machine shed for a piece of steel when I spy a scythe hooked in the rafters, just the same as mine. I start telling Tom about my scythe and how I've been using it. I tell him about how I sharpen it, using the three stones in sequence, keeping them wet, how I follow the arc of the blade. "Yeah, sounds like you're doing it about right," he says, and inside, I glow a little.
So what compelled you to hit record on your phone in the first place and do this?
I just thought, you know, right now folks probably just want a little connection. And so everybody in the world is streaming stuff right now. And I thought, I'm just going to prop up my phone, read something, say hello, and let it go at that and leave the mistakes in and the do-overs and the mispronunciations.
You get festooned up with an injury. You get festooned up with an injury. There's no do-overs on this. This is a one-off phone recording, folks. You get festooned
and
up with
an injury. So far, the reaction has been pretty positive with people even mentioning they like the fact that there's a mistake in there or a do-over or me laughing at my own jokes, which is really the hallmark sign of an amateur. But what can I say? I haven't read some of those pieces in a long time, and a couple of them are kind of funny.
I shall never forget the day I got my first pair of feeder pigs. While the farmer and I were lifting the first one into the pickup, I detected a profound pain in my left rear buttock. Upon closer examination, I discovered that the farmer's gigantic coon dog, no doubt assuming I was stealing the pigs, had gone stark raving bonkers and was actively masticating a double whopper's worth of my backside.
Why do you think it's important for authors and artists and musicians to still be putting their content out there on social media right now?
Well, I had a musician friend one time. I was being real like, oh, it ain't nothing. It's not important what I'm doing. And he said, you know, it's fine for you to be self-deprecating, but don't do so much of it that you're actually denigrating your audience. And the truth is, I think the reason it's important for writers and authors and musicians and all artists to be getting their stuff out there is that for many of them, and it's a matter of survival, but also I really have, in spite of myself, come to appreciate, you know, that 5 minutes of connecting with some different headspace, if you will. And so honestly, putting those things out there, I don't see it as any sort of capital letter effort. I just see, look, if I can take 10 minutes to record that thing, that is nothing if it's given people 5 or 10 minutes of relief and maybe a chuckle.
Most of all, take care of yourself and your loved ones. We'll see you down the road, or as they say where I'm from, well, I suppose.
Mike Perry is an author social distancing himself in Fall Creek, Wisconsin. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Brad Colbert.
Now, New York City is the largest hotspot for COVID-19 cases in the country right now. According to data from the New York City Health Department, as of yesterday evening, there were nearly 65,000 confirmed cases, over 14,000 hospitalized, almost 2,500 deaths in the city. This has dangerously stressed the healthcare system there, and both supplies and staff have come from across the country to help. Jackie Christensen is a nurse practitioner who traveled from Wisconsin to New York City to work in an emergency department during the COVID-19 pandemic. Jackie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Can you describe for us the type of healthcare facility you're working in while you're in New York?
So while I'm out in New York, I'm at one of the hospitals. I'm working in the hospital emergency department primarily.
And what is, if there is such a thing, what's a typical day like there?
Well, a typical day out here hasn't happened right now. A typical day for me in an emergency department, I'm a nurse practitioner, so I do similar things to what a doctor does. I talk to patients, I evaluate them, I listen to their hearts and lungs, kind of things that you would expect at something like a doctor's appointment, and I figure out what's going on with them as far as their medical conditions go. So most people in an emergency department come in with a problem that they think is possibly life-threatening, and my job is to make sure that they're not in imminent danger of death, is the long and short.
As you say, it's not a typical day there now. Can you talk about the patients you're seeing come in with COVID-19 symptoms?
So honestly, the vast majority of patients that I've been seeing out here are COVID-19 patients, and we're seeing a lot of people in respiratory distress. One of the measurements that we take on people when they come into an emergency department is their oxygen level via what's called a pulse oximeter, which is just a little clip that sits on your finger and measures roughly how much oxygen is in your blood at a given time. It's not a perfect measurement, but it helps certainly. The average for a normal person is anywhere between about 96% and 100%. We're routinely seeing people at 75, 80%, sometimes even worse on room air. And even with supplemental oxygen, we're sometimes seeing them only come up into the low 90s. So we're seeing lots of respiratory distress. We're seeing lots of people with a problem called sepsis, which is where their blood pressure drops dangerously low to the point where it doesn't perfuse and get blood flow to their organs. So that's been a problem out here with COVID patients as well.
Jackie, what led you to go from Wisconsin to the center of this pandemic in the United States, at least for right now?
So honestly, part of it was just kind of happenstance. I had taken most of the month of April off just as a vacation time anyway, so I didn't really have anything to do, and it seemed silly for me to sit on the sidelines when there's a crisis going on.
So you took your vacation time to go and be in the hardest hit part of the country right now?
Yep.
Wow. Can you talk about what you're seeing from your fellow healthcare practitioners? What's the morale like? What's the mood like among people at the center of this?
The mood is up and down. It's almost like a parabolic sine wave. Sometimes the mood here is very high and teamwork is phenomenal. Sometimes some of the nurses are in the nurses' station just in tears because they can't handle what's going on, and nor should they handle what's going on. A normal patient ratio for nurses is about maybe at most 5 patients in an emergency department for 1 nurse. Where the lowest ratio I've seen here is 12 relatively sick people for 1 nurse. We've seen ratios as high as 20, 25 patients for just 1 RN, and it's just not enough. So the resources are, as far as manpower, is just absolutely stretched to their limits. Most of the people that have been working out here have been absolutely fantastic, that said. Everybody's been very kind. Everybody's been very helpful, particularly to me as a traveler who's never been in their facility before. I don't know where anything is, for example. So if I need supplies, I have to go and bother somebody else who's got 20 other patients that they're dealing with to try and get my stuff taken care of. So everybody's just been phenomenal as far as their welcoming attitude. Everybody's been very gracious to one another. Stress is high, and that stress doesn't always bring out the best in people, but I feel like it's been bringing out the best in some of my cohorts out here.
Now, seeing the worst of it right now in the U.S., the coronavirus, do you have a message for us here in Wisconsin on what we can do to help hopefully alleviate, prevent some of the worst cases here?
Please stay home. If you can absolutely help it, if you don't think that you're in a life-threatening condition, don't come to the emergency department. Most of the people that we're seeing are coronavirus patients and are sick enough that they do need medical intervention. But we're still seeing some people come in for things that they honestly don't need to be seen for on an emergent basis. And they're exposing themselves to all the other coronavirus patients when they do come in. So please, if you can help it, stay home, self-manage at home. Do the best that you can to avoid leaving your house if you are sick.
Jackie, thanks for joining us and thanks for the work you're doing there.
Thank you for having me.
That's Jackie Christensen, a nurse practitioner who traveled from Wisconsin to New York City to work in an emergency department there during the COVID-19 pandemic. She joined us to share some of what she's seeing there in the middle of things. Coming up, you may be cooped up at home, but you can still enjoy the outdoors and experience wildlife. We'll share some ways to help you and your family connect with the outside world. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Morning show, get reactions to the latest on what was scheduled to be Election Day in Wisconsin, whatever ends up happening. It's tomorrow morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. Now, the weather's been getting more and more spring-like lately. Maybe you've noticed the grass getting greener, tulips coming up from the ground, more robins at the feeder. After months of snow and cold, it's a great time to celebrate National Wildlife Week. The National Wildlife Federation is encouraging kids and adults to connect with wildlife and the outdoors. Besides, there's only so much you can do inside the house, right? The Federation has a lot of suggestions on how to do that, including planting trees, gardening, and more. David Mizajewski is a naturalist with the National Wildlife Federation and the author of the book Attracting Birds, Butterflies, and Other Backyard Wildlife, 17 Projects and Step-by-Step Instructions to Give Back to Nature. David, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, it's a unique time, obviously, to talk about wildlife and getting out into the great outdoors. Do you have specific recommendations for this kind of unique situation we're in right now, David?
Yeah, we do. You know, at National Wildlife Federation, we've been hosting National Wildlife Week for decades. And, you know, normally we're really trying to get people to head out into nature, into the wilderness, and go to those campsites and national parks and all of those kinds of places to enjoy the great outdoors and hopefully observe wildlife. And obviously this year with the COVID-19 pandemic, we have kind of shifted our messaging a little bit and focused it a little bit more towards home. And, you know, the reality is that nature really is all around us. You don't necessarily have to go far away on a trip in order to experience it. Nature is literally right outside our door, even if you live in the middle of a city. And so for National Wildlife Week, we're doing something that we're calling the My Wildlife Challenge. And what we're hoping folks will do is just share pictures of themselves out in nature or their favorite spot in nature. You know, these could be the pictures from your last trip out into the wilderness, or they could be pictures that you take right now in your own little piece of the earth, your yard or your garden space, or, you know, on your evening walk with your kids or your dog. Obviously, we want to make sure everyone is practicing the appropriate social and physical distancing, staying at least 6 feet away from anybody if you are outside, and washing your hands and following all those best practices. But if you do that, it's still okay to get outside. And in fact, it can really be helpful to de-stress in these really stressful times.
Well, I don't like the reason that we have to do this, but I kind of love the idea that, okay, to enjoy nature and wildlife, we don't have to drive across the country to a national park. We can take that stuff that's kind of background noise for us and focus in on some of what makes it special and unique. Can you get us started on some ideas on how to do that? Maybe the little brown birds we see every day, how can we recognize them again and start to have fun, you know, just seeing them around us?
Yeah, you know, backyard birding is the perfect way to connect with nature during the pandemic. You don't have to travel. Again, you literally just have to step outside your door into your yard, and there are birds all around us. We're in the beginning of spring migration. And there's, you know, a lot of species that are going to be showing up this week in the Wisconsin, you know, across Wisconsin. Everything from, you know, songbirds, you know, orioles, flycatchers, vireos, lots of different warblers, but also things like sandhill cranes and pelicans and terns. There's all sorts of bird activity going on depending on where you live. And so one of the fun things to do is just go outside and start listening. You know, bird calls to me are, it's kind of like learning a new language. You know, if you were to travel to a different part of the world and to where people speak a language that you don't speak, it's just a lot of, you know, background noise. But once you start learning a word here and a phrase there, suddenly you get kind of clued in. To me, learning bird song is the same thing. You know, most of us take for granted and you just hear all these, you know, birds chirping, and it's, again, background noise. But once you begin to identify one species and then a second species, suddenly experiencing the outdoors has whole new dimensions. And in fact, we've actually got a whole we've got an app, a new series of nature guide apps from the National Wildlife Federation that have all of the songs of all of the birds across North America. So you could download that app and actually listen and try to identify some of the different birds that are found right outside your door. Great thing to do with kids as well.
David, I'm a fantastic student for this because I can identify two or three birds by their sounds, and that's about it. What's a good place for me to start? Maybe using that app, or I know a lot of, you know, ornithology labs have them. How do I listen to what's out there and then match up with something like that in an app to where I can start to learn that that foreign language that the birds are speaking?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think apps are the way to go. And as I was mentioning, the National Wildlife Federation has a whole new series of nature guides. And it's not just birds. We've got them on mammals, which also make certain calls. Amphibians, frogs are also calling right now. And our nature guide apps have a whole bunch of amphibian sounds, too. So a lot of times, frogs can actually sound like birds and vice versa. So, you know, the apps are a really great way to do this because you can download them onto your mobile device and, again, walk out the door with them. We're kind of talking about them as 21st century field guides, because in the old days you had to lug a giant book with you when you went out into nature to, you know, help identify. And these nature guide apps that we have now allow you to take literally 50,000 pages of content and thousands of audio files with you right in your pocket.
Wow.
So again, you can do this in your yard, on your evening walk, you know, that kind of thing. And it's a fun way to, you know, kind of experiment. You know, you're going to hear something and you're going to have to take some educated guesses on what it might be. But the apps actually let you hone in on your location. You know, you might have seen the bird and you don't know what it's called, but you can kind of filter the search results by things like the size and the shape and the color of the bird to help you kind of figure out, you know, what the potential options are. And then once you narrow it down, you can listen to a few of the different calls and hopefully you'll find the bird that you're hearing. And in doing so, you might even pick up, you know, the call of a different bird species too. So that's a really fun and easy way to, you know, to kind of, again, experience nature. You can put out a bird feeder right now too. That's something very simple. So many Americans have bird feeders already. And, you know, it's a great way to attract, you know, your backyard birds to one spot every single day so that you can see and enjoy them. And I was talking about the My Wildlife Challenge. that's another great opportunity to snap some pictures of the nature visiting your yard right there at a bird feeder. And what we are hoping folks will do is upload those pictures to the National Wildlife Week website. And in doing so, give us all something fun to look at, something to lift our spirits while we're all, you know, practicing self-quarantine during the pandemic. And every time somebody uploads photos to the My Wildlife Challenge, you get entered to win a cool outdoor prize packet with just some gear and things that will help you actually experience nature once the pandemic is lifted and you can go out camping and hiking and things like that.
Talking to David Mizejewski, naturalist with the National Wildlife Federation, talking about appreciating nature, maybe just in our own backyard, out our own window when travel is off the table. You can join in. A new number today at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. Are you doing some backyard birding right now or appreciating nature in your own backyard, your own community? 800-228-5615. Well, David, I wonder, you know, we've got squirrels and rabbits all around. You can see those cities, country, just about anywhere. Are there ways that we can, again, these are background noise animals for me. Are there ways we can look at them with a fresh eye and become animal behaviorists and figure out what they're doing this time of year?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly what it's all about. It's about while we can't go out on our normal day-to-day routines because of the pandemic, and many of us are working from home and the kids are home, you know, it's as simple as just going outside and making it a point to look at things that you might have otherwise ignored, right? And so, or listen for that matter, or smell, you know, all of our senses can be used to really experience the nature around us, even taste. You know, one of the things that we're also trying to encourage folks to do is plant a vegetable garden right now, or an herb garden. You know, if anybody is a gardener, you probably have seed packets lying around from last year. I know I do. So this is a perfect time to sow some seeds. You can plant them indoors, even if it's just in like little paper Dixie cups or something, a little bit of potting soil, and get them going. Great thing to do with the kids. And then once the weather is warm enough where you're going to be past frost, you can plant them in the ground or in pots and then nurture them and watch them grow. This whole idea of doing a pandemic victory garden is something that is a lot of people are doing, you know, growing our own food so that we don't necessarily have to rely on going out to the grocery stores. But this is a fun way to, again, get a little bit more connected to nature, get yourself and your family outside, do something that can actually be part of if you have kids, it can be part of the learning that kids are doing as they're being homeschooled, you know, the life cycle of plants and the relationship between plants and animals. If, you know, if you're trying to attract birds, you know, what do birds eat? They eat seeds, they eat berries, they eat insects, and our plants in our garden provide those. So lots of great opportunities there to just kind of connect the dots. And really it's as simple as just making that a goal, making it a priority and going outside and just observing. And I guarantee you will be shocked and surprised if you actually do that, all the different cool things that you're going to observe right outside your door.
It's National Wildlife Week. In a time of pandemic, we're talking about how we can experience the outdoors and nature during this outbreak with David Mizejewski, naturalist with the National Wildlife Federation. If you go to their website, you can find info about some of the apps that he's been talking about. And you can join our conversation right now. Different number than usual. Regular callers, the number today is 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. Have you been able to get outside and experience some wildlife? What kind of interesting birds, animals, and insects have you seen maybe in your own backyard? Are you looking forward to visits over the next few months from maybe butterflies? 800-228-5615 is the number to call or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrett. We're talking about National Wildlife Week. That's the National Wildlife Federation's initiative to get people outside to the extent that they can during this COVID-19 outbreak. They've got lots of advice at their website, including some apps on how you can appreciate nature, maybe just by looking out your own window. David Mizejewski is with us, a naturalist at the National Wildlife Federation and the author of Attracting Birds, Butterflies, and Other Backyard Wildlife, 17 Projects and Step-by-Step Instructions to Give Back to Nature. You can join in at 800-228-5615. We want to know how you're celebrating nature, maybe closer to home than usual. Are you and the family making it a point to get outside when you can? What kind of stuff are you seeing outside? Birders, what are you seeing? Getting any exciting visitors lately? 800-228-5615 is the number to call. That's 800-228-5615. Let's go to your calls now. We have Dan with us in Brule. Dan, hello.
Hello, how are you today?
Good. What have you been seeing, Dan?
I've been very fortunate with some of this weather coming through that it's the season that the trumpeter swans have been returning. Ooh. And fortunate enough to have them coming in and making a visit on an old abandoned beaver pond right by the backyard. And it's been beautiful. They sound like a old junior high band trumpeter, like the trombone section trying to warm up every time they come in and out.
That's
fantastic,
amazing.
Dan. Yeah, yeah, David, actually, that's a great one to hear.
Yeah,
you go ahead, David.
A great example of the fact, again, that nature is all around us. And, you know, it sounds like you might be in a more rural area, Dan, but, you know, even if folks are living in cities, these birds are flying by. You know, most of our cities, major cities, are in some kind of migratory flyway. So it's literally just about getting out there and opening up your ears and opening up your eyes, and you're going to see some amazing stuff.
Dan, thanks so much for that call. Now, David, I know in your book you wrote about attracting birds. You also wrote about attracting butterflies, and I'm looking forward to monarchs, some milkweed adopted some of my garden spaces a couple years ago, and I let it go, and it's spreading, and I threw in some feed plants, and now, you know, monarchs are showing up in pretty good numbers each year. Can you talk about how we can make sure we're on their flight path?
Absolutely, yeah, and I'm glad you brought up monarchs, because the world of local wildlife is broader than just birds. There's tons of insects, and butterflies, of course, are insects. And, you know, people don't tend to think of insects as wildlife, but they are. They're animals, just like mammals and birds and reptiles and things like that. And so these are a group of wildlife that can really be benefit from what we call a wildlife habitat garden. They're the kinds of wildlife that could coexist with us, you know, in our cities and towns and neighborhoods. And unfortunately, in the case of the monarch, it's kind of become the poster animal for what happens when we human beings get rid of natural habitats, specifically when we get rid of the native plants that wildlife has co-evolved with and that actually rely on each other to complete their life cycle. So, of course, monarch butterflies, well, like all butterflies, they start out as caterpillars. And every butterfly and moth species, their caterpillars can only feed on the leaves of certain plants. We call them that species host plant. Without those host plants, the caterpillars die and the populations of these insects go down. Now, for monarchs, they can only feed on milkweed. There's a bunch of different species of milkweed, but it's only milkweed that they can use as a host plant. And again, milkweed has a PR problem because it's got weed in the name. And so we have gotten really good at just wanting to get rid of it, whether it's in our yards and gardens or in agricultural areas. And as a result, the monarch population has plummeted. It's one of the main reasons. And so what you just described, Rob, is exactly what we're hoping folks will do. Plant some native milkweeds in your garden. Plant some native wildflowers that are going to provide nectar to the adult butterflies. Milkweed actually does both. It gets beautiful blooms on it that the adult butterflies will nectar at. And that's what we can do. Plus, don't spray pesticides in your yard. And if everybody does that, and now's a perfect time to be getting out there and planting those milkweed seeds and those native wildflowers, we're going to support the monarch butterfly population. Now, in Wisconsin, you guys are kind of towards the northern end of the monarch butterflies, the eastern monarch, their migratory route. These are one of the few migratory insects, and they – think about this. A butterfly flies from as far north as like southern Canada all the way down to the mountains outside of Mexico City. And there they overwinter for about 8 months. And just a few weeks ago, that entire population of butterflies is now migrating north. And it's going to take them 3, 4, maybe even 5 generations of laying their eggs on the milkweed plants, of their caterpillars going through metamorphosis and then emerging as the adults before they make it up to Wisconsin. And what they are going to need at that point in time are lots of those milkweed plants and other native wildflowers. So if everybody does that now, you'll know that you're helping give that population a boost, because it's actually really declined precipitously in the last few decades, and they need all the help we can get. That's the kind of stuff that the National Wildlife Federation has been promoting through our Garden for Wildlife program, and it's the exact kind of thing that folks can be doing this week during National Wildlife Week.
We're talking to David Mizejewski, naturalist at the National Wildlife Federation, talking about National Wildlife Week and ways to appreciate nature and wildlife, even when we can't travel so much to do it. Our executive producer, Judith Sears-Poisson, mentioned that, working mostly from home now, she's become more aware of the rhythm of birds in her backyard, what time different species might come to the feeders, how they act when they're there. That makes me think, David, a great project for kids would be to just have them be naturalists and keep a little field guide. What birds, how many, when are they there, when do they leave, what are they doing? That could be a lot of fun for them.
Exactly. It does not have to be complicated. One of the other amazing resources that we have up on the National Wildlife Week website, which, by the way, is nationalwildlifeweek.nwf, as in National Wildlife Federation, .org. So nationalwildlifeweek.nwf.org. We have made all of our Ranger Rick magazines available for free on our website. And so that means that all of our Ranger Rick and Ranger Rick Jr. and Ranger Rick Cub magazines have online versions with all the fun stories and comics and content photos that are in those magazines, plus educators' guides, plus parent guides, plus a whole host of other stuff like videos and games and projects and crafts. So if you have kids at home and you're starting to go stir crazy and the homeschooling is becoming a challenge, please tap into all this free Ranger Rick content. The magazine wins awards every year. My colleagues produce, these magazines that I'm personally incredibly proud of. I read the magazines as a kid. And so the idea that you just said about getting your kids tapped into being, sort of budding naturalists just by encouraging them to go out and observe and record what they see, that's where it starts with becoming a naturalist. That's how I got my start when I was a kid. That's the exact kind of content that you're going to get from the free Ranger Rick resources. And again, folks can go to nationalwildlifeweek.nwf.org to access that, to get more information on the My Wildlife Challenge and how you can enter that by uploading your photos or videos of nature. And it's just an incredible resource that I hope everybody checks out.
David, one more activity we haven't spent much time on. For people with the room, with the yard to do it, you're encouraging people to plant a tree to celebrate the week.
Absolutely. I mean, it's always a good thing to plant a tree. Trees are wildlife habitat. They provide us with shade. They can help us keep our houses cool and reduce energy costs. They, of course, produce oxygen and take in carbon dioxide. So, trees are just a good thing to do, anytime. So if you happen to be able to, maybe you have some acorns in your yard that you could now plant into a pot and make a little, sort of home nursery. That's a great thing that you can do now. You can also call your local nursery or garden center and see if they are operating. Some of them still are, and they're doing things like sort of roadside pickup, where you don't have to, violate any kind of social distancing rules, but you still might be able to get some plant material and actually plant a tree.
David, just briefly, where you are, what is the next wildlife migratory visitor or hibernating visitor that you're looking forward to seeing?
Well, I am currently in the New York City area, and so we're definitely practicing lots of social distancing here. I am on my evening walks with my dog hearing the spring peepers. Mm-hmm. And these are tiny little tree frogs. They make a big old noise. And to me, it is just the sign that spring is really here. And it's kind of like magic. It only happens for, a couple of weeks at this time of year. So pretty amazing.
That's a great sound. David, thank you so much for sharing this with us today.
Thank you, and happy National Wildlife Week.
David Mizejewski is a naturalist for the National Wildlife Federation and the author of Attracting Birds, Butterflies, and Other Backyard Wildlife, 17 Projects and Step-by-Step Instructions to Give Back to Nature. We talked to him today about National Wildlife Week and the importance of connecting with the outdoors. If you search online for National Wildlife Week, you'll find their website with the resources he was talking about, the field guides, the bird sounds, and the free, apparently, Ranger Rick magazines. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, political divisions emerged right away as the novel coronavirus started to show up in the United States, and they may have hurt our response to the outbreak. We'll talk about disease in a divided country. A guest tells us why regular rituals are more important than ever when our daily lives see a lot of uncertainty. And we'll get the latest on Wisconsin's scheduled election day, whether or not it ends up happening tomorrow. And we'll take your calls with what you think about how the state handled it. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.